Coming to you from Las Vegas, this is the Bar Stars Happy Hour, a show for bar people by bar people. We'll get to know different bar stars from around the globe and serve up tips, tricks, and the untold tales of the industry. So whether you sling drinks in a bar or just enjoy a round or two, join us for Happy Hour, because this pod's for you. Welcome into the Bar Stars Happy Hour. Bar is open. My name is Tom.
And I'm Jackie.
And this is Happy Hour number 4.
Number 4.
We are beyond excited for our guest today, but first I want to take a second to say thank you to a few of our new Bar Star regulars. We had a lot of people write in, and we just want to mention a few. Banam G, Heather R, and Lindell M. We really appreciate you joining our new community of Bar Stars.
That's so awesome. And if you haven't done it yet, check out our website. You can click the button on the top right that says Become a Regular and keep up to date with all of our new fun stuff going on. The other thing we've gotten is a lot of really good reviews. And for us, that's really amazing. It's the thing that helps us out and helps us keep going. So if you could take a second, go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review, and that would really help us out. We love you guys.
But back to the show. You know, fun fact of the day, August is actually National Rum Month.
No way.
Yeah. So get sipping on those mojitos and Cuba Libres and original Mai Tais.
Oh, that makes me think of Jamaica.
Yeah, pina coladas.
Such good rum there.
Sure is.
Anyway, back to reality. We're super excited about our next guest. We're going to switch things up this week, and we are going to go from behind the bar to the corner office.
We sure are. This guy has done literally everything from busser to bartender, director, and now he's actually the vice president of food and beverage for Penn National Gaming and the Tropicana Hotel and Casino here in Las Vegas. Mr. Rupert King, welcome to the show, buddy. How are you, man?
Hi, Rupert.
Hi, guys. It's great to hear your voices. I've missed you very much. Thanks for having me today.
Anytime, brother. Anytime.
So, Rupert, tell us about what quarantine's been like for you. I know everyone has their stories.
I think week one was amazing. We installed the tree swing in the front yard. We started doing painting projects in the house. We were really active and motivated. Kids were excited to see
me.
I was, I don't think I'd had that much time. I had done so many projects in the past couple of years between Beer House and the Park MGM transformation. And to be able to get that much time with my kids was great. And then about week three happened, and I started doing PowerPoint presentations for my wife on how we were going to redo the flooring. And yeah, well, idle hands. And now we're at the point where the light's at the end of the tunnel. I know my wife is definitely ready for me to get out of the house and give her some free time. So September 1st, we got our opening date. I'm so excited. It's unbelievable. And it's been interesting. I think the first couple of weeks, I don't know about you guys, but I couldn't not watch the news. And then I got burnt out of that, and I didn't want to watch the news for a week. And then people
were addicting.
It is.
Yeah.
So I picked up the guitar. I started playing guitar again. I started running again.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I guess personally, I'm in a better place. But man, I definitely need to get out and have some human interaction. This is probably the longest I've actually talked with somebody in a minute.
Glad to be of service there.
Yeah.
So you said you guys were going to open September 1st. I mean, I know that we've all seen some businesses be successful in their reopenings, some businesses maybe making some mistakes here and there. And, it's just a difficult situation all around. In your situation, what do you think are going to be the most difficult things for you? What do you see as the obstacles to overcome there?
Yeah, gosh, I mean, it's a great question. And we're lucky that obviously we would have liked to have been open a little earlier, but I think the decision to open on the first was the right one, and we've been able to see what some people have done, and there's been some great, great things that have happened in the city with the programming. I think that the two things that scare me when guests start coming back to Las Vegas and they're coming back to the Tropicana to visit us, it scares me that we're not going to live up to their expectation and what they think their vacation is going to be like. I think that that's going to be the hardest part is to be able to manage that. And I know that people coming in, they're not leaving a normal life to come to Las Vegas and all of a sudden it's different, but it's not the Vegas that they're used to. And we get a lot of return guests. And I mean, look, we're in the industry. I mean, how many of our people come in and we see them 3-4 times a year and it's their friends, right? And they come in, and is it going to be weird to not hug your friend that's coming in from Canada to say, hey?
Yeah, regulars.
And that's to me, that's going to be a challenge. And from them, what's that going to feel like? And what's it going to be like?
Right.
From the guest perception, I think that's going to be the hardest thing. What technologies are we going to be able to leverage to try to overcome some of the things that are missing? What are we going to be able to do to really make that moment special for them, so they feel like, yeah, this is Vegas. Vegas is, as always, the trendsetter and the leader in our industry. Mm-hmm. And then the second piece that worries me is really my staffing component, my employees. These are great people. And how many of them are still around? I've been on furlough. I'm not allowed to call and contact them. I don't know what's going on in their lives. I don't know if it's in there, your family, right? You spend as much time with them, if not more, than you do with your real family. And
true.
When you're like, gosh, you know, I know this person grew up in Ohio. Did they go back to Ohio? Where, you know, have they been able to, did they get unemployment, or are they some of the unfortunate that are sitting there still waiting to collect unemployment? Are they around? Are they going to come back? Are they at risk, right? Are they in an area where they want to work, but they feel like they shouldn't come back to work? You know, I'm proud. We have my two most senior people in the building have 100-year seniority between the two of them. I don't know if they're going to come back because I don't know at that rate.
That is so cool.
Yeah, isn't that cool? Like, I love that story. I met him on New Year's Eve. One gentleman has 52-year seniority and the other gentleman has 48-year seniority.
Holy
and it was
shit.
New Year's Eve. And they're like, hey, it's so nice to meet you. We're so excited. They wanted to give me a tour of the banquet space. They're like, let's go, let's go, let's go. They were my spirit animals.
New blood.
Yeah, when I'm there for 52 years, I want to have that kind of energy. And it would be sad if, you know, they're like, oh, you know, you never know the last day that you do something. And it would be so odd that if that was the last day that I worked with these guys.
Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. And so once we are open, it's just really about being able to adapt. And luckily, when we opened Park MGM, we had to make a lot of changes. It wasn't the final product that we have. It's still not final, but what we were at was, we were going through and opening venues. It was a constant, okay, well, this is what the guest wants. And luckily I know the team that I have at the Trop, they're going to be able to adjust and they're gonna be able to overcome and be able to adapt to the new demands of the new normal.
The new normal it's cliche. I don't even like saying it, but I mean, I think there's two ways to look at it. There's no way around that this is difficult and this is not ideal and we have a lot of limitations on us, but we do have an opportunity right now to create new rather than think about what we don't have. And the more we're able to focus on that, potentially we can create a new experience for our people in the time being. That's just as great.
Yeah, I agree. And I know that the people that work in this industry as professionals, they take what they do seriously. They are not fly-by-nighters. They have dedicated 20 years or 30 years or 15 years to what we do. They're perfectionists. And they're not going to let everything just pass us by. And we're going to have to be able to adapt and create. And you're right. I mean, I hate that I said normal. It drives me nuts. But I don't know how else to explain what we're going to encounter, what we're going to do on a day-to-day basis.
But speaking of all of the places that you've opened, I think you're the only person I've ever met in my life to work every level of the corporate ladder and climb every single level from busboy to now VP. And I think it's just impressive. It's crazy to think about how many rungs on that ladder you have to go through. But it's impressive, man. Tell us a little bit about how you did that.
I appreciate it. And it's something that I'm very proud of. It has not been an easy journey, but it's been one that I've loved. And yeah, I've climbed up the ladder and I've definitely fallen down and hit my chin on a couple on the way up too. there's definitely been points where
you have to, though. You have to learn.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I couldn't have done it without my wife, Sandy. She's the catalyst for really what transpired. We were sitting down. It was towards the end of the run at the Red Room Saloon.
Oh, boy.
Which I know you and Jane Franchise talked about. Yeah. Look, what a great place. And I can't wait for you guys.
I do want to do a reunion.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to have to redo a reunion. I'm just going to have to make sure that my kids, whatever internet platform they have, it gets erased and they don't have access to any of that. because they're not going to believe it. But
no cell phones.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, there's I joke about there's two Ruperts. There's the Rupert that was the bartender that was just crazy and didn't really, you know, he just did things. He was very impulsive in what I did and how I lived my life. And then there's the one that I met my wife and she's like, you know, what do you want? What do you want to do? And what's your career goal? And we talked about it and she's been so supportive and she's been there for me every step of the way. And she's seen me put in 70, 80 hour work week. She's, you know, and she's been there. She's my biggest cheerleader and I couldn't do it without her.
So sweet.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, if you've ever met Sandy, she's one of the smartest people you'll ever meet. And she's very quiet about how intelligent she is. And she's very talented and but she'll motivate you. She kicks you in the butt and she'll call it what it is, man. And she's not afraid to say, hey, okay, enough's enough. Now you need some family time. Or, hey,
I feel like I got one of those too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It feels like, you know, when you're the bull and you have like the ring through your nose and they just grab it and tug on it. I feel like that happens to me quite a bit.
For sure.
But I couldn't imagine life without it. And look, I think I was able to get in the right place in the right time with the -5 group and they were just so great to me and they've been awesome and they gave me the leeway to learn and develop and grow and really take the skills that I had and continue them. And then I got to join MGM and Open Beer House. And I mean, gosh, what a great year that was to be able to have that and get ready for the first Golden Knights game and get ready for Pac-12 and George Strait concerts and just sort of get that vibe and that atmosphere, which I think the city was missing very much. And then do something totally different and, you know, take a director level position and transform Monte Carlo to Park MGM, and right place, right time through that whole progress. I was able to just, to be the first one in the building and from food and beverage and the last one out of the building and work as hard as I could. And that hard work paid off. The expression, the only time that, work, comes after success is, in the dictionary, right?
That's right. That's true.
And that's how I feel. You got to be hard. You got to work. And for me, it's always been the love of learning and continuing my growth. At one point, I want to have my own bar. I want to have my own place. And this has been a way to learn at a super high level, super competitive.
Right.
And with some of the best people in the industry. I've got to work with the guys from Italy who are just so smart. What a great project that is. And if you haven't been able to get something like that out, that's so cool. Work with Chef Irvine, work with Brendan Sotokoff, work with the Nomad guys. I mean, you want to talk about two guys that are just passionate. They did three new hire orientations and I sat through two of the three of the new hire orientations and I missed the first one because we were in a development meeting for one of our projects. But these guys live food and beverage and they were just so passionate about what they were doing. You know, to win best restaurant in the world is something.
I have to say, Tom and I have been to Nomad twice. Once on the restaurant side, which is exquisite. Once on the more like bar lounge side. And both experiences were, I mean, the food was amazing. The service was amazing. And we're picky. We're picky people. You know, being in the industry yourself, you expect a certain level when you walk in and it both times just totally blew me away.
Yeah. And it's a testament to what those guys can do.
There's something to be said for where we live and the opportunities that are around us. And if you can't learn all facets of the industry and the business here, where are you going to learn it? I mean, everything is right here at our disposal. We just got to figure out a way to access that knowledge and that experience.
It is. It's the city. If you're going to do food and beverage and you're going to spend time and you're going to learn, this is the city to do it because there's no concentration and there's no obstacles like exist in this city, right? And for each obstacle, it's a great learning moment. I think we've all been able to go through them and every time something new comes up, you get to learn from it. And,
right.
And people look at what we're doing and they say, hey, does that work in Miami? Does that work in Chicago? Does that work in LA?
Sure. Absolutely. I have this, well, it's not a theory. I think a lot of people believe it, but I think to be a really good leader, especially in our industry, it's really important that you have had frontline experience first. So talk to us about how much value you think it's added to your role and your job now that you've actually been a bartender before, as opposed to getting into management without that experience.
In my opinion, I wouldn't be able to do the job without the experience I learned as a bartender. Just how guests interact, the frustration of being a bartender and dealing with the guests every day and having a valid point and saying, hey, why don't we try this? Because I think people don't go into this to try to throw a wrench into the system, right? We have intentions, and to not be heard makes you disgruntled, and to not feel appreciated makes you not want to put 100% into a job that you love.
Exactly.
So to me, I couldn't do the job that I do without that background.
I totally agree. 100%.
You know, and I think we're all of the same mindset, and we all sort of grew up in the same crew of people that we all care very much and we're all passionate. And I think a bartender is a bartender, and we all take pride in our craft. But once you start talking about guys that do bar competitions or mixology competitions, or once you start dedicating time not at work to honing that craft, you put in your 10,000 hours to be a specialist at something, there's something added to that. And I think when we all care very deeply, we all want our venues to succeed, and we all take pride. It's, hey, come see me at my bar.
Right.
I run it.
Right. So how do you provide that up close and personal service that people know and desire from Las Vegas, yet still keep the proverbial distance or the wall in front of you or between you, or keep everybody safe?
Yeah. I mean, that's
the challenge.
That's the $1 million question, right? And to me, I think technology is going to play a role in this. In order to make a venue profitable at half capacity, and I'm not talking about getting rid of bodies. That's not what I mean. But you have to use the technology at your disposal or develop new technologies to be able to enhance that experience, right?
Sure.
Because you're going to want – you can't just order off of a phone – and know that that's the hamburger and that's what you should get, right? There has to be a way to communicate that and be able to make it work. But I think you're going to have to leverage those technologies to make it happen. And for me, is it a quick, as you log in and you look at the menu, it's Chef Robert Irvine coming in and saying, hey, welcome. Thanks for giving us a shot. This is what we'd recommend. And do you add that cool piece into it? Do you go back to the days of Blockbuster and it's like, you know, these are the, and you have like a board and these are the staff picks of, this is my beer of the week, this is my appetizer,
right?
Like, we're going to have to just sort of play it by ear and try to put the human component back into it while leveraging technology.
Right. I think that's smart.
Miss Blockbuster.
Yeah. There's one Blockbuster left and they just started selling merchandise.
Oh my God. It's difficult too, speaking on the employee side of it, because I have gone back to work and the added restrictions and regulations and all the pressure, I mean, there's pressure on all sides, right? But as an employee, as a frontline person, it's a lot. It's a lot of tasks added to your job. It's a lot to remember. We're all used to doing things one way and it's a completely different way. And there really, there's no room for error right now. So yeah, it's going to be a tough thing.
It is, but I guess, you know, that as a leader, it's my intent to be there and see it and touch it and feel it, probably figuratively. I'm not going to literally be touching people's stuff, but you know, to be able to see what everybody's going through so you can make an educated choice.
Take away the COVID part of the world right now. What's the most important factor for success in the food and beverage industry? Is it the people that serve the industry, or is it the people that make the industry, basically the customers that come into the bars and the restaurants, and quality? And is it the quality you put out? Or, I mean, what is it that makes a success in the food and beverage industry?
The X factor.
I mean, that's a great question. Yeah. You know, I think it's a brilliant question. And to me, I can only speak on what I've experienced and what I've seen is that to me that you could argue that it's being creative and being unique. You could argue that it's the food, the quality, presentation, right? But when you break it down, none of those things can happen without the people.
Right.
Right. I've been to some great restaurants where the service was horrible and the food was great, but I wouldn't go back. I've been to places where just it wasn't anybody's fault. Just the meal didn't go right, but the people made it worthwhile and I give them a second chance. And to me, that's what separates it, right? Do you have passion? Do you have desire? Are you always learning? Are you can't be one of the things without having the human component to it. And to me, you can't be successful without the people, right?
I agree.
Absolutely.
You look at why is In-N-Out so successful, right? Hamburger's good, but they breed people. The corporate culture inside something as simple as a burger place is unreal. You know,
totally elevated.
You feel like they care about making sure that they get it right.
Agree.
Right. And it's better to do 5 things right than it is 50 mediocre.
You know, it's, I worked with this guy, Chef Nathan Frost. He was my executive chef at Beer House, and he's been able to, we sort of come up together through the city. But he said, doing one thing consistently perfect is way more important than occasionally hitting a home run, right? And he's right. I think that you you need to just get it consistent and get it correct. If you can do that, then you add the other elements in. But if you can't even get the simple stuff right and execute correctly, you're not going to win.
Totally agree.
Right. I feel like it's a field of dreams scenario where people think sometimes if they just build it, people will show up and they'll come and you'll be successful and that's it. And that's just not really the case. You really got to put your nose to the grind and do it and work at it every day.
I think in terms of people, though, being the most important factor, I mean, part of that's hiring. And so, Rupert, when you look to hire new people, what do you look for? What's the most important thing to you in an interview?
That's a really tough question because each job requires different things. And I don't just mean the difference between an apprentice and a bartender and a cocktail server and a lounge server, right? Or a model cocktail server in a high volume nightclub, right? Even in those, you look for different things. And to me, I think when you're hiring, the most important thing is a well-rounded team. Right. Mm-hmm. I just finished watching The Last Dance. Shame on me. But I was able to watch it.
And, oh, man.
And you look at what those guys were able to accomplish and everybody had a role.
I've watched it twice.
It's so good. I actually thought of you guys when I was watching through it. I was very nostalgic of growing up, you know, through that time. But there's something to be said about what Phil Jackson was able to do, right? You take a guy like Dennis Rodman and you put him together and you know, nobody wanted this guy. And here you go. He fits the need.
Right.
I use the analogy of Moneyball and what the Oakland Athletics did, right? To me, it's math. It's building that team. So say you have a bar concept, right?
I love that story. And
it's a killer story, right? And the thing is you watch it and you go, duh, it makes so much sense. But then it didn't. This guy was ridiculed for what he did, but it makes sense. And I feel the same way about the bar. You need, I worked with this guy. He was a Friday's bartender and I loved him. He was amazing. He was okay. He was okay in the service bar. He was okay with his drink knowledge. He could flair, but he could talk to a guest and get them to sit for another round or two. And not only that, he'd get that guest to talk to another guest. So then he wasn't even talking to people anymore. They were just talking to each other. So originally they'd come in to see him, but now they have their whole group. So now he's got his Monday posse that shows up and the Tuesday crew shows up. You need that guy, right? And
right.
We've all been to bars or worked in bars where there was a certain aesthetic that they were going for. And yes, I like to go to a bar and have a lot of beautiful people inside of it. But if none of them can make a drink, you don't go back, right? So you
right.
need the flash, but you need the sizzle to go with it. And you need the speed. So you need to put that in. And you need somebody in the service bar that can understand that a cocktail waitress is dealing with so many things and she's getting her butt kicked and all she wants is her beer and just get it to her so she can get her job done so that she can flip the table and get the next round in. And you have to have the guy that understands that and that can bang out the drinks and they speak the same language, right? And can laugh through it because that's just, it's a tough gig. And you need, the hostess that understands the correct way to run it. And then you need the manager that's there. And you need a mom manager and the dad manager, right? And you need the one that understands ordering and pricing, but understands that there's a value added component to it that's extremely important. So if you're looking at just staffing, how do you staff a bar? You need all of those pieces together. And it's not one person, right?
Agreed. Totally fascinating.
Absolutely agree. I mean, my dad used to say, he was in the bar business for the majority of his life. And he used to say, the secret to being a good bartender is to get one customer to talk to the customer next to them, find the thing in common, and they'll stay for another round. That's the key. That's the key is to create friends between people that don't really know one another, find the commonality, and they're more than likely going to stay there for, like you said, another half hour, hour more, and another one or two drinks.
Yeah.
Well, I think that speaks to the point that a bar, a lounge, even a restaurant, but it's not simply just the product you're putting out. It's about creating relationships too. Important.
100%.
It is. And you know, you asked it like, how do you pick that team? To me, it's not the traditional interview. Like if anybody's ever interviewed with me before, it's do they fit? Does it feel right? Is it going to be a symbiotic relationship? If I have to spend 8 hours of hell, and we've all had those shifts where just nothing goes right and it's just horrible.
Right.
If I had to spend 8 hours with this person, would we laugh through it and just get it done and make sure that we gave the best experience possible? And to me, there's many ways you interview through that, but I think that's the important part. having all the drink knowledge in the world can't save you.
Sure.
Right. Having the best customer service in the world can't save you if you can't make the drink. So it's how do you make sure that these complex layers build in together?
Life's about balance, man. And bartending is running a bar, I guess I should say, is no different.
It's not, right?
So let's switch gears a little. Let's play some games real fast.
Love games.
Let's play a little game we like to call fill the seats.
Ooh.
So you get three seats at your bar. You can fill them with anyone, dead or alive. Who would your three choices be?
And why?
Gosh, you know, that's a great one. I think the most selfish one would be there's people that I have lost in my life that I would love to see again. But that's not going to make for a good podcast at all. I'd say the one that I would be most excited for is when my kids are of age to drink. I would love to be able to sit down in their 20s at a bar with my kids and be able to, you know, what did I do wrong? You know, dad, you scarred me for life because of this. Or, you know, I'd love to learn from that experience. Again, sure. Not good for a podcast. Lady Gaga. I want Lady Gaga at the bar. I want to hang out with her.
That's awesome.
Everything I've seen from her, the time I've been able to spend.
I love her.
Yeah, right? Like, she's killer. So I would love her there. Bo Jackson.
Oh, yes.
Right? As a kid growing up, if I had the opportunity to be able to meet this guy, right?
Like, yes.
Just what an athlete. Just so cool, overcame so much. And the thing about him is it was such a quick flash, right? He was Superman
right.
for a couple of years and then just like Kaiser Sose disappears, right?
Gone. Yep.
I want to talk to this guy. And he was like a man's man. Like this guy goes out, he goes bow hunting, like, you know, dresses a deer, throws it on his shoulder, walks back and, you know, 3 miles through the woods with a deer on his back. Like the guy's just cool. Like I want to hear stories from him. How did he overcome his stutter? How did he become the person? Think about before Bo Jackson, right? The marketing of Nike wasn't what it is now, right? Like you could argue Jordan helped it with the Mars sort of run, but the Bo nose might be arguably, and I have a marketing background, it might be one of my favorite things ever. And I think that was just brilliant.
Absolutely.
To do it. Cross training. It built a product, right? So I would love to sort of pick his brain through all of that. And then I think the last person I would put in there.
It's iconic. Yeah.
Oh, it's super iconic. If there's anybody in our age range, you could show the Bo poster of him with his shoulder pads and the bat holding across the bridge of his neck, right? And everybody knows that image. It's in black and white and it's absolutely killer. It's iconic. Yep. And it speaks to a generation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And to me, I like not being so serious all the time. I think Russell Brand would be cool to have at a bar.
Oh, hell yeah.
Ooh, that's such a good one.
I think that he and I sort of think on the same wavelength and anybody that spent time with me on a golf course or, yeah. The guy, he cracks me up. And you got Gaga, you got Bo Jackson, you got Russell Brand, and I think I'm going to have a good night.
Absolutely.
Damn, I want to go. I want to have drinks at that bar.
Yeah, I think I would definitely that's the dream team right there for me.
That's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. That's pretty good. Two of the three could actually happen. I mean, Bo Jackson lives right down the street, and Lady Gaga has a residency in town here, so that could actually happen.
I have a killer Lady Gaga story at one point.
Ooh, tell us.
So it is my first week as director of beverage at Monte Carlo during the transition, and it's Saturday afternoon, and I get like a phone call from my vice president. He said, hey, we need to get like a killer champagne bottle. I need like a magnum of rosé, and I need it as soon as possible. And I'm brand new. I'm still figuring out how the ordering system works. So I talk to my chef. My chef gets me in touch with somebody else. Finally, we get in touch with the director of wine at Aria. We're like, look, we need a bottle, because the Monte Carlo at that point had Brand Steakhouse up until then. And there really wasn't, you know, this super elevated champagne list. There was a great product, but it's definitely not like having Nomad and Bavette's and all the other places now. Right. So we're going to Aria and we get this bottle, and I'm walking back with, you know, a magnum of Dom Rosé. It's, you know, we're walking through, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm trying to run through and I've signed for this bottle, you know, it's super expensive. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm lost because there's construction. And they say, okay, now go to the theater elevator, go in the Park Theater elevator and hit 2. And when the door opens, you'll see what's going on. So I don't know how to get there.
That's
cryptic. So I call one of my managers. They're walking me through. We have to stop. Oh yeah, don't forget champagne glasses. We had to get champagne glasses. So I finally go in, door opens, bing, I walk out, and I am 5 feet away from Lady Gaga and Bill Hornbuckle and Patrick Miller she's signing her contract for Park MGM for whatever the $100 million or whatever the deal is. And they're doing the photo shoot, right? So
did
now I'm losing my mind
die?
Because this is happening. Yeah, right? And I'm like, well, okay, so, you know, director of beverage, pretty cool thing. We get sworn to secrecy that I can't talk about this because we haven't announced the fact that Lady Gaga is going to be the resident at Park MGM. A couple months later, the announcement comes out and it's, so my wife Sandy says, hey, did you know Lady Gaga is going to be at Park MGM? And I'm like, yeah, look at this picture. So I scroll through and she's like, you knew? And I was like, yeah, sorry. They made me promise not to tell. She's like, you tell me.
Oh, no.
And anybody that knows Sandy, I love her to death, but it's definitely, I couldn't have told her. So I was in the doghouse for a while there for that, but what a trip.
Oh, I bet.
That is so cool. That is such a cool story. All right. Let's play another game. Let's do this or that.
All right.
All right. This or that. Here we go. Phone call or text?
Oh, phone call. Absolutely. To me,
I'm a text person.
Everybody in the world's a text person. I'm just not. I double and triple think what the tone is of the I just overthink it. It makes it so complicated. And then you're texting somebody for 30 minutes and how do you awkwardly end the text?
Right.
And to me, like, there's just something about being able to talk to somebody. It's just that you get more accomplished to me in a 3-minute phone call than in a million texts. I love a good phone call.
It's old school.
Pancake or waffles?
Oh, waffle, because you can hold more syrup. I'm from Vermont, right? So
love it.
Whatever can hold the most syrup is the winner.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Oh, God. That's great. I think vanilla, because I think the ability to change and add toppings, like especially if it's ice cream, you have more options there. I think with chocolate, you at some point become limited.
Burgers or tacos?
Oh, man. Tacos.
I have a thing for tacos too.
Again, I think you get like there's great options for burgers, but you know, with tacos, it's hard shell, soft shell, what kind, you know, is it shrimp? Is it beef? To me, there's so many different variables there that I would choose tacos.
Would you rather swim in a pool or swim in the sea?
I love being at the sea. I have a hardcore shark phobia. I have a feeling that at someday a shark's going to take me down.
Yeah.
I know it's super unrealistic, but I feel much safer in a pool than I do.
Could happen.
It could. You know, look, if the three of us are in the water, like the shark's going to eat me, not you guys, because like I'm the Big Mac and you're like the little chicken nugget. Like it's taking me down.
Okay. Shotgun a beer out of a used shoe.
Uh-oh.
Or chug a Guinness with a mayonnaise packet.
Oh, man.
Uh-oh.
This is oddly specific.
This might be a real life topic, actually.
Yeah, this might be a real life topic. Gosh, I don't know. I will say that I think just for the nostalgic of it, I think doing the beer out of a shoe. I mean, you know, playing rugby through college, you shoot the boot. It makes me giggle. I instantly regretted the Guinness with the mayonnaise.
Yes, you did.
Yes, Rupert has become a legend for completing both of these tasks.
Yeah.
Let's talk about fantasy for a little bit. Let's say we get out of this realm and then Rupert gets to open his own bar. Where are you opening it? What is it going to be like? Is there a theme? Is it on the beach? Is it in? Is it a club? Is it what is it? Design your own bar for us.
To me, I've probably got 5 or 6 concepts in my head that I would like to do, and I think a lot of it just comes down to what's available. I think the dream would be on a beach. You know, I would love to be on the water. I would love to be able to talk to local fishermen and buy what they're catching right off the boat. I think the cocktail selection you could do there. I think the menu is great. The atmosphere is good. Typically, when you work in those environments,
oh, so you
it's
have a
seasonal.
Full restaurant. You want a full restaurant.
Yeah, I have a menu laid out. Sandy and I, at one point, we were going to pull the trigger and do it. And I think just one thing led to another. And at some point, that's the route we want to go to. But I've got everything from a hot dog joint that I'd like to do to an attachment of a bar concept for a par 3 golf course.
Yes, sir.
I've got high-end stuff. I've got a tapas concept. I've got a sports bar concept. Every time I see something, I have like in my notes section, I just, oh, that's cool. I would think I would do this, but I would change it. And I sort of feel how that goes. I've worked with enough people now in town and trying to cram something into a spot just because you like your concept doesn't make sense. Sometimes you just have to look at the demographic. Who's there? What's the disposable income of the guest that's going to be coming in there? You know, what are they drinking? We just went to Hood River. Like, you want to talk about beer per capita. They've got like 9 breweries in like 1 square mile of that town. Like, I mean, to not do some sort of beer venue there would be, I think, suicide. So you just sort of have to look at where you are and what you would do. But I've been working on a project since college that I would do. I've got the logo. I've got the shtick. I think I've got the marketing piece dialed in.
Wow.
You know, I just think that I've been afforded the ability to keep learning, and each progression I make, I learn more and I learn more. And I haven't gotten to the point where I'm tired of learning yet. And I think, to me, that, you know, when it stops becoming fun, and I really, to me, that's the dream, is to own your own bar and have fun with everything you've learned. Put it to your own use.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people have, like you said, stopped learning, and not necessarily by choice, but just, they get complacent and they get comfortable.
Absolutely.
If there's a group of people that can be creative and that can come up with the answer and the solution, it's the professionals that we have in this industry. So I can't wait to get on the other side of this, and it'll be different, but it'll be better.
Absolutely, man. Listen, you are a true success story, and we're proud to know you, and we're proud to call you a friend. Thank you for coming on the show, man. Continued success, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. And I look forward to seeing you guys. I look forward to the next time we get to sit down and have a beer.
Soon.
Maybe it's through a shoe. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to figure that out.
Sounds good. Thanks for stopping by, Rupert.
All right, guys. Be safe.
Man, that's a cool dude. I want to be him when I grow up.
I do, too. Thanks for joining us today. We had a whole lot of fun. I hope you did, too. We're really grateful for you spending a little bit more of your week with us. And we're going to continue to get better. Next week's guest is an adrenaline junkie, so be sure to look out for it.
That's true. And remember, you can always check us out at barstarspodcast.com and subscribe, follow to Barstars Happy Hour on Apple Podcast to get all the latest episodes as soon as they come out. And if you like what we're doing, please give us a 5-star rating and leave us a kind review.
That would be great.
Sure would.
We are also on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher, iHeartRadio as well.
Absolutely.
To name a few. So, yeah, happy listening.
We had a great happy hour and truly hope you did too. Until next time.
Cheers.
What do you mean I can't have an EO?